I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith and Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars, and this week, a lady who lived in a car.
I've got a rug around my legs.
Are you still cold?
Oh, I'm absolutely freezing, mate. Absolutely.
Someone
freezing.
Sent us a message after last week's show.
I'm freezing. It's freezing.
And said, since Johnny's always mentioning how cold he is, he needs to get... And they sent a link to some sort of action blanket.
What do you mean, an action blanket?
It's called an action blanket. I think it's made by those people... I can't
that
remember the name of the company.
Sounds like it's definitely sexual connotations there. Do you fancy a dive under the action blanket? It's very...
Shall I get the old action blanket out, love? No, don't bother.
Seriously, no, it's okay. Hand warmers. No, that's all right. No, that's the reason why we're going to knock our house down, Rich, because it's fundamentally crap. So it's not insulated to the current regulations, and it's fired by oil, and it's just old and bad 70s, not even good 70s. I forgot to tell you, actually, last week, I start the new year going backwards in technological terms, because the laptop I'm recording this podcast on is my backup laptop from 2008. So my normal laptop just had a bit of a brain hemorrhage. In fact, it did it the day after New Year's Day. And I was like, oh, Bobbins, what can I do while I'm sending it away? And I just dug out the old one, and she struck up. It was like a barn find laptop.
What, so you mean it's worth $9,000?
I'm thinking there's some dust on it. I'm hoping that maybe, I'm going to get someone coming along like a cash in the attic, and they'll go, oh, wow, a MacBook 2007. Yeah, finished in the black. That was the run-out model, so that was the last of the old spec. Now very, very durable keyboard, good feel to the controls. Yeah,
was it? I'm trying to remember what they were like then. All I can picture is those translucent blue ones, but I know it's not. They
were
90s, weren't they?
Mine's quite thick. It's probably an inch thick. I'm looking at the thickness, and which is a lot for a laptop now, isn't it? And
Does it look like a Sex Pest laptop?
No, it's not quite. It's not quite on that level.
We have discussed this on the show.
It's not
before,
a U-tree laptop,
no. No, we always see men in motorway service areas and on trains using Sex Pest spec laptops for some reason. Oh, you have mentioned it on the show because somebody...
SPL, Sex Pest laptop.
Somebody pointed out they're probably they're work laptops, and that's why they're in motorway service areas on trains. They're people who have been given that computer by their job, and they need that size of laptop for whatever it is they do. They're probably like structural engineer or something.
No, they don't.
But cannot escape the fact that a certain thickness and dimensions, like width and height of laptop, looks sex pesty.
Or Cold War hacker. You know what I mean? Because...
No, because... Surely, if movies have taught us nothing else, you'd know if they were a hacker, because as they use it, every time they type in a command line, it goes...
Oh, that's true. And they dress really disheveledly and live with their mums. That always seems to be a prerequisite of being a successful hacker.
You never get a well-turned-out hacker, do you? Don't get like a hacker who's just like really, really immaculately dressed.
No.
Smells good.
Or a hacker that's a bit of a swordswoman.
Bloody hell, talking of smelling good, we've mentioned before, I think, about, you know, excessively musky men.
Yes.
Like artificial musk, you know, men who really splash on. And you left me that slightly creepy message the other day to tell me you've been splashing Brutes on to excess.
I think that was a straight 3-second glug down the neckline.
Well, it was all...
You count to three. Imagine it was pouring for 3 seconds. That's a lot of liquid onto the shirt.
You must have honked.
Oh, my son went to give me a hug. He went, God, Daddy, that's a bit strong. I was like, yeah, of course it is. Just the way we like it.
Well, I bring this up, I've just reminded myself...
Have you got it?
That sinister message you left me. Yeah, I'll have to dig it out. I'll bung it on the end of the show if I can find it, because it was creepy. Now, the reason I bring up musky men is because I was just walking down the street the other day with our dog, and
musky men.
There was an old shape Overfinch Range Rover pulled up, really tidy looking and not too blingy. It was nice, quite tasteful. It just had different wheels on it, which were quite nice. And it was you know, sort of quite smartly understated. As I got closer, the driver opened the door, and I was hit about a second later with a wall of musk. It was incredible. Like, if I'd had a sword, I reckon I could have just cut a cube of musk.
Was it a pheromone fog?
The bloke had got out. He was quite smartly dressed, though. He was quite well turned out. But then he got a baseball cap on as well. And quite a young guy. But he had musked up to an insane degree. And I was thinking, it's strong in the open air. What it must be like if you were sitting in the Range Rover with him? You'd probably suffocate.
That would be, if you were going to measure it in foo oranges, that would be an 8 foo orange count. You know, like the Beaufort scale, is that for wind? Yeah. Well, I'm going to measure it, not in magic trees, because that's too obvious. Let's go older school. Foo orange, if anyone remembers the foo, is it a foo orange or foo orange?
I always say foot orange.
Oh, foot orange. Well, I don't do French. I just let the funky music do the talking. But, you know, I really, sorry, I absolutely love that song, can I just say?
Yeah, I do.
And I'm pretty sure that none of Girls Aloud have ever been able to speak French, but I'll stand corrected if they can.
Well, then they re-recorded that song in French.
What?
Which is a kind of irony that there's not really a word for, but anyway, yeah.
Oh, bugger.
There is, look it up.
I didn't know
there
that.
They re-recorded it in French.
Oh, well, but I stand completely
correct. Still goes.
Well, that just
Well, no, that doesn't...
I mean,
they probably just had the words written down. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean they speak French. I don't know. You know what a foot orange reminds me of, though, is when I was a kid, when I was at primary school, one of the lads in my class, Nick, his dad was the dealer principal of a Vauxhall Opel garage.
Yes.
And he always had senators, not egg crate senators, but before, pre, like Monza shape.
Okay, senators. yes, yeah.
Those were usually his company cars because he was the boss. And obviously they were all demos, you know, because... he's a car dealer, so I think he might have smoked. I can't remember. It's, you know, it was the 80s, so
yes, he
obviously
did.
To,
is the answer
to car
that.
Fresh? Yeah, yes, yeah. Car dealer 80s, ding. Yes, he smoked. But to keep the car smelling fresh, always a foot orange from the rearview mirror.
And absolutely. And do you remember the activation process of the foot orange?
No, because the middle, the foot orange means orange light, doesn't it? And it it was a traffic light design for people who haven't seen these air fresheners.
80s air, 70s lights, air fresheners, yeah.
And the middle light, the orange one, was actually not just printed on the cardboard rectangle that dangled from your rearview mirror. It was like a sort of a almost like the nose of a bullet-shaped compartment of smell. And then on the back of the cardboard rectangle, there were perforations that let the smell escape. Is that how it worked?
However,
if I remember right.
Every
However.
Single foot orange, there was a pin slipped into the cardboard sheath.
What?
And
was
you
there?
you would prick the back of the orange, and then thus, yeah, because when you buy them, they're sealed.
I suppose so.
You have to prick, and they gave you the pin in order to start it and to begin the process, and that's what I loved about it. There was a ceremony to it. There was a bit of ceremony. And then it would bleed through the foam.
But you know
at the
how
back.
You do magic trees, though?
You're supposed to leave the sheath on a bit.
Yes.
But nobody does.
No, I didn't know that. And I lent my car. I had a Seat Leon long-termer from Evo. And I lent it to a colleague at Top Gear who went and allowed a TV film crew to be transported around in it. And TV film crews just always make cars smell for some reason.
Well, it's trench foot and a bit of BO and probably a no-name energy drink, the combination of the three.
And I would add wet grass and stale crisps.
Oh, yeah.
Possibly
someone would have
stale tobacco.
Someone will have tipped a packet of Frazzles just as they were climbing in the car and trodden them nicely into the carpet.
And I seem to remember they cleaned up the interior. They smashed one of the back lights with a tripod by mistake while they were loading the boot, which was irritating. And
seriously?
Yeah. And they tidied it up, but it still smelled. And so in desperation, and this was like one afternoon they had it because they were desperate for a car. They need to get somewhere. And I had to get a magic tree. I'd never bought one before. This was, you know, it was about, what, 10 years ago. But I was a total air freshener virgin.
Your first car air freshener.
Yeah, I don't like car air fresheners. No, I don't like car air fresheners. Really, you know, they're one of those smells that is clearly a smell masking a slightly worse smell. And I don't know, it just, they bother me. So
is it? It's a bit like a heavy smoker just putting excessive aftershave on just to mask the fact they've been out for a cig.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't quite work for
Never
you.
Never works. And also, I hate things dangling from the rearview mirror. But I bought a vanilla magic tree and I hung it.
Oh,
from
I used to love them.
The grab handles in the back. It just made me want custard creams. Every time I got in the car, I'd go, custard creams. I might have to buy a packet of custard creams on the way to work.
Do you know what? That's a bloody good idea, Rich.
So anyway, yeah, just to sum up, feu orange, the appearance and smell of those air fresheners just makes me think of very, very thick Vauxhall velour.
Yeah, and like you say, there's a whiff of tobacco smoke that's desperately trying to be masked by said air freshener.
Okay. Hi, Simon, we've managed to flog your demo, so, you know, just leave the windows open for the morning and we'll be fine.
Yeah, put a couple of creep little feu oranges under the seats. Stick them under, that's what I would do. I have to say, whenever I've gone to view a car to buy, if it's unnecessarily fragranced inside, you do immediately go, what are you masking? It's a bit like post number two in the toilet. What shall I do? Do I spray it? You know, in the case of this household, we still got lots of Christmas spiced apple air freshener left over. I'll give it a toot on the spiced apple. No one will know. Of course they'll know. They'll know exactly what you've done. Because you haven't put spiced apple aftershave on, although that would be bloody good. That'd be right up Paul Hollywood Street. That'd be amazing. Oh, imagine that. Apple and cinnamon across the neck with a hint of sandalwood. I mean, honestly, the ladies would just be coming out of nowhere. It'd be like a dog whistle.
I know we're pretty confident, having said discussed nobody. It on a video once, that Paul Hollywood is a very musky man. And I'm sort of amazed he doesn't make his own. Maybe he does. Because he knows
how to
put things together ingredients-wise, doesn't he? But if he just manufactures musk in his kitchen when he's not baking...
I want to put the word out to the world that I think a car enthusiast's scent would be really good, where there was this sort of like carefully melded cocktail of... it has to be WD-40, because I think that it's universally an interesting smell. And then you'd have to be quite careful with the sort of the kerosene or the I don't know, super unleaded, whatever. And then you'd have, what else would you bring in? I'd have to bring in something like
a little bit of new car smell, not a bad thing.
Makes some people nauseous, so you'd have to make sure you do your R&D correctly so that people don't feel sick when they meet you.
Yeah, Chinese car buyers hate new car smell, apparently, and it's one of the things that's driven the quest to eradicate it.
Really?
Yeah, so Geely have launched a car not that long ago that uses no glue in the interior. Because glue is one of the contributors to new car smell. There are loads of reasons why new car smell is a thing, though. I investigated this years ago, and I got so much research that I panicked and didn't do anything with it because I couldn't cram it into a column.
Couldn't truncate it.
Yeah, I only did it for an Evo column, and it's like, you know, back then they were 750 words, and I was like, that's too much. Can't do anything with this. It's too long.
Abort mission.
Yeah, exactly. But there's loads. Someone told me that, like, the plastics, obviously, in the plastic. But he said even like your dashboard mouldings. The smell can be affected by not only the stuff they're made from, but also how they're stored and stuff like that. And it's really complicated. So, and the actual goal is, and this was years ago, I think it was someone from Toyota said to me, the goal is a zero smell new car.
But what's a zero smell?
Well, it just doesn't smell of anything, which is, you think, is pretty hard. I say, though, I mean,
it's got to be impossible, Rich.
I quite
it
like some new car smells, like, you know,
it?
Yeah, well, you'd think so, wouldn't you? But then I suppose some stuff doesn't smell. I also wonder if it's like some things smell to some people and not to others.
I've just had to plug in my laptop. I totally forgot to, and of course, it's got circa 2008 batteries.
Of course, it's got like a 10-minute battery life.
But, well, it's a, everything smells. It's a bit like you think your house doesn't smell because you're in it all the time.
Mm.
When you get out of it, then you go back in. We've talked about the sort of slight phobia of being in a long journey on your own in a car, windows up. You've probably started super early. Let's just say you're on your third coffee and you had a curry the night before. So there's some cabin aroma kicking about, and then you get to your destination. Before you can get out the car, the other person just climbs straight in. And of course they're going to witness the compression of the air that's definitely secondhand. You don't think it's probably all that, but it could be appalling, couldn't it?
It could.
A bit like going round to other people's houses when they're cooking. We've talked about that before.
Oh, there's nothing worse.
Maybe the Chinese market's going to be well into that. I want my car to smell like my mate's mum's cooking when I open the door.
Well, maybe that's why that man I saw in an Overfinch Range Rover, he's whatever he does for a living, it involves him being in the car for a long time and then meeting with people. And to avoid any risk of having a fruity car, He just
ladles it.
Absolutely spoons on the musk, and then. But what's funny, thing I was going to say
image.
Is that I once, one of the most intense musk experiences I've had in recent years was when I met the man who owns Overfinch.
And seriously?
Yeah, and he definitely musked up quite strongly, and to the extent that this was pre-COVID, he shook my hand once when we met, and then a short time later when we said goodbye, and I could smell his aftershave for the rest of the day.
Oh, so he put it on with his hands, old school method.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know what you got me thinking? I bet Overfinches have an option for a perfumery in the glove box. So the glove box comes down and it's like that scene from Anchorman with Sex Panther where it all
the great smell of Overfinch.
Yeah. Overpowering Finch. It could be called. Obviously, that's the when you go for the extra engine spec. It's called the Overpowering Finch. But also, what about other finches? I mean, as someone that's interested in wildlife, I mean, could we not? Could Overfinch not add a couple of other derivatives in of finches?
What type of finches are there?
You could do it. You could goldfinch.
Goldfinch.
Clearly, it'd be for the the Middle East market. Everything would be very gold and expensive.
If they've not considered metal. This, they're missing a trick.
They
gold
totally. I mean,
Finch,
wow. He's the one. The one who's put an excessive amount of aftershave on. From his
now,
glove box.
Look,
dispenser.
Guys, listen. Look, there was something I meant to bring up last week and I forgot, which is my personal car dilemma for 2021. Because
okay. Talk to me, Terry Tips.
Our Jag I-Pace, which is our family car, is on a lease and it's going back in March, and I was going to extend it, but because the deal we have on that car was, as they belatedly admitted, a mistake, and
it's also probably a loss leader.
Well, exactly, because the supplying dealer told me 130 people got I-Paces as a result of this offer that it turned out was a mistake. So, and they honoured them as well, which was
bloody hell
good. But when I said, can I extend, their system doesn't recognise the current deal because it was a mistake. And so the price goes up quite dramatically.
Okay.
So the Jag is going. And
no!
And
I was hoping you, because I know you were umming and ahhing about keeping it.
I know. And now every
You've
time I drive
it
or look at it, I go, shit. But it's not. I mean, I'm not going to fork out a load more for it because it's silly. We don't use it that much at the moment, anyway. So, it's off.
No,
and because we don't use the car at the moment very much, I was going to find something to replace it, and can't find any good deals on I-Paces, so that avenue is closed. Which it's okay as long as we don't need to go anywhere. Which at the moment we don't. Like, you know, if we need to get all of us kids plus dog plus luggage in, then my Defender is not optimum because it's a 90 and the dog goes down the middle bit between the seats, which have got the kids in them in the back. Not
that's
a lot
right,
of bag
Rich.
Room. You could do, or I could, I don't know.
Lots of head space, yeah. You know, lots of cabin.
Or do we just need a stopgap family car? Partly because I don't want the Land Rover getting fucked up inside, and our children just, you know what children are like, particularly the age ours are. they just cover everything in crap and sticky stuff, and I'm a bit precious about.
Well, that's why our family cars always have the granny rug on the back seat.
Oh yeah,
to stop the divots from the children's seats, crisps, semi-sucked sweets.
Yeah,
honestly, tartan rug every time.
Yeah, or a mate of mine who's also got an iPace at the moment went absolutely bananas and got like this sort of basically like sheets of tarpaulin that completely encase the back of the car. It's extraordinary. Oh, but
what, like taxi driver sort of anti-sick precautions?
Yeah, yeah. But everywhere. Wow. Yeah, like it's extraordinary. But then, you know,
I think I know who you're talking about. But
I think, okay.
I'll have to have words with him.
Anyway, so look, sorry, long story short is I've started browsing some sort of cheapish cars that might do as I thought. I just want something. I'll buy it outright. That's just a workhorse. I can let the dog rampage all over it, and the kids get sticky bits everywhere. It'll be fine. And for some reason, right, I started looking at old shape discoveries, which
oh seriously,
I don't know why. I just did. But then I discovered that when the ultra low emission zone extension comes in to London, where I live, later this year, your standard Disco 4 with a V6 diesel, which is pretty much all you can get in those, will be liable to pay £12.50 a day just for driving around our neighbourhood. So that's no good. So that's when my search moved for the practical stopgap family car to a supercharged old shape Range Rover.
Seriously.
Well,
I mean, I can't believe I'm so you don't want to mess up the like heavily rubberized floors of your Defender. Yeah.
But it's got so beige seats. It's got beige cloth seats. This is the problem. It was not a practically designed car.
You can spray that coating on it, which I've seen from a company called Carbon Collective, I think, like a detailing company. And they've got this lovely potion that you spray on, and it sort of repels stuff like coffee.
Yeah, because I looked for some of that when I got the car, because I thought these seats are going to get fucked up. And I was just looking for old school Scotchgard, which I don't think you can get anymore. But I'll look into that. Because in fact,
have a goosey.
There's already been a spillage in my Land Rover, which attracted my chagrin, which is TV's James May spilt a cup of tea in it. And,
oh yeah, I remember you saying. Didn't he just borrow it for like a short drive?
No, he was in the passenger seat. I was giving him a lift.
Okay.
We were going from the hotel to the Grand Tour tent in Oxfordshire when we were filming that show, and he took a takeaway tea from the hotel, and he was fumbling it. He was trying to get the lid on it as we got in the car, and I was like, "Are you sure about this, May?" And he was like, "No, oh, it'll be okay." And I was like, "You know, he is a precise man, and anyone could be trusted not to cock it up. It's him."
Precise
but then he
man.
Did cock it up, and he opened the lid or something. And as we, you know, obviously the ride in that car is a little bit jiggly, and
don't know what you're talking about.
And the roads between the hotel and the studio were a bit bumpy, and I just heard him go, "Oh, ports," and I knew something was up. And I looked over, and there's a big puddle of tea between his legs. And to his credit, when we got to the studio, he swung into action as only a precise and pedantic man can, and he got loads and loads of kitchen roll and water and Christ knows what else, and he took care of it. And there is no stain on that seat, so he did a good job. But it still displeased me because, you know, the seats are very light coloured and impractical. The absurd thing is, because the extension of that ultra low emissions zone is sort of based around the emission standards of the engine, but they're very out of kilter depending on whether it's diesel or petrol. Even quite recent diesels get clobbered with the charge. Whereas,
what are you buying the car for?
I don't know.
What's its typical journeys going to be?
Because
in which case you just want something really slaggy.
But what?
Well, I you've got two children. You don't need another Discovery. You don't need a Discovery.
No, I know I don't.
Where are you going? What are you going to do? The bloody like Camel Trophy on the way to the nursery?
You might do. It's very
absurd.
Hilly
it's
in
like
North
a
London.
It's a 2.5-ton car for a town vehicle. It's just.
I know it's
just buy a Focus Estate for £700.
Mm.
Oh, there you go.
It's not as nice, though,
is it? You won't do it. You won't do it.
Well,
you won't do it.
Because we don't really need it at all. I'm not going to buy anything at the moment because...
Hang on, you've just said it's not as nice. I would totally disagree with that.
What?
I cannot stand
a £700 Focus Estate is not as nice as a supercharged Range Rover. No, Discovery's gone. Well, not getting a Discovery because they get congestion charged.
You could buy an immaculate Focus first gen for £700.
I know.
Like, you know, old man owned gear. I just would never want a supercharged Range Rover. I don't have any interest in one at all.
Well, I'm not going to let you go in it then.
No. But people are always surprised. They go, well, yeah, but it's because it's a supercharged V8. So, I know, it's a supercharged V8 attached to something I have got no interest in owning at all. Because all it is it's just going to rinse you every single day of your life and it won't go around corners and I'm out.
Well, it does go around corners. It just...
No, it doesn't. They're shit. They're shit at going round corners.
I mean,
Range Rovers are awful round corners.
Well, it's not a Caterham, is it? But it's different.
People think they're brilliant family cars. Like, well, they're not really, because they cost about £140 to fill the tank, and you have to fill it every 3 days, and it will go wrong because it's what it is.
No, well,
you can't repair it yourself.
No, well,
and you just want a quick stopgap car. Just buy an Audi A4 Avant that's for like £1,300.
It's just not interesting, though, is it?
I think so.
You think a £1,300 Audi A4 Avant is interesting?
It can, but, well, look, okay, buy an Audi Allroad twin turbo V6.
Oh, no, God, Jesus Christ. I mean, do you know what? I'd put more faith in an old Range Rover than one of those. They're horrific.
Would you?
Yeah, they're famously flaky.
I feel this is our feature coming on. If only we were allowed to do a road trip. You can buy a really high mileage supercharged Range Rover, and I'll buy a really high mileage Audi Allroad, and we'll have intercom system.
Whose air suspension will let go first? Got a bit of a dragster stance going on there, mate. No, want it to be like that. That's how I want
it. Suddenly it's gone really hard. That's because I've put wooden blocks in the airbags because they've gone.
Yeah, couldn't afford to have the steel springs swapped in, so I've just put wooden blocks in there.
I want to buy you a car now.
I said I'd ruled out a Discovery, but I did find a Discovery 3 with a V8 in it for £5,000. Which I did briefly go, okay. I think I just want to get some idiotically large internal combustion out of my system before I go back to an electric car. I think that's what it is.
I mean, it's funny that you're going from an... I know, hang on. Why don't you stick with Jag? Why don't you say, I'm going to spend £3,000 on a Jag that I don't care too much about, that the kids can enjoy, that the dog might have somewhere. I mean, that would be the difficult one, the dog, wouldn't it?
Dog.
No hatch.
Mm-mm.
Or...
Well, apart from an X-type estate, and I'm not having an X-type estate, so...
Why not?
Because they're just not interesting.
Oh, what, not even the four-wheel drive one?
No. I don't think so.
Sure.
There's one lives around the corner from me, and I did look at it and go, oh, I could... No. No. You know what I saw this morning, though? I saw the C-Class, the sort of first C-Class, after it replaced the 190.
Yeah, 2005 era?
No, pre that, 90s.
No, pre that.
And you don't see them around a lot because they were from the, you know, the age of rust in Ben's terms, and
they were.
But this one, it was a C180 automatic, so it'll be slow as shit. But it looked really tidy, really tidy. Like, I couldn't see any visible rust on it, and those things visibly rot like bilio, don't they? So I was looking, I was going,
oh yeah,
quite fancy that. It had a cloth interior as well. Like, it was proper boggo, but it wasn't for sale. It was just parked at the curb. But I found myself going, oh.
Do you know those Mercedes? If you, I'm going to go a bit ASMR now. If you go really close, a bit like putting a shell, like a conch, to your ear. If you put your ear to the wheel arches of a Merc of that era, you can just hear it rusting.
It sounds like someone's dropped a Barocca in a glass of water.
Yeah, you know, it does. It does. It's exactly. It is exactly that. It's just that.
Has someone put milk on Rice Krispies near my head? Oh, no.
And of course, you get the same sensation from buying any Alfa Romeo pre-1990.
Yeah, they're not mega. Actually, are they? When did Alphas stop being so mega rotty? Though I think 80s they'd sort of licked it.
But yeah, 80s. What was the 7? The 75 didn't rot heavily, I don't think.
No, I feel like it. Maybe it was Gulf. How do you say it?
Gulf.
Do you know the
West Country galvanising?
The last kings of rot were the 210 E class and the Ford Ka, I believe.
Oh yeah, the cat with the fuel filler area.
Fuel filler always goes, and the door bottoms and the sills go as well. Bloody hell! Did you see though? There was a car for sale last week, with 43 miles on it or something.
What?
Yeah, and the backstory, and it was immaculate as you'd hope. It'd been garaged, one owner, and the backstory was that an old lady had bought it. She'd driven it home. She'd got frightened on the drive home, so she just put it in the garage and never drove it again.
What?
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's funny how people make those decisions, and you don't think, well, I'm not going to use it again, so I'll just get the garage to come and pick it up and pay me some money for a trade-in on it, and that'll be that. But no, they just go, no. I've had an experience, I'm never going to drive that car ever again.
I'm just going to get, I mean, this is from the mid-90s, so what is it? Basically she was going, I'm just going to get £7,000 and shut it in the garage.
It's a biscuit tin with 7K in it.
Yeah, but the mice are slowly gnawing at the money, so it's not 7 grand, it's 6.5, now it's 6, now it's 5.5. Well, until such a point, I don't know what it sold for. I think a dealership sold it to a collector. This weirdly low mile one last week, and so it's gone to a safe home. I do love
those sorts of cars being discovered, or people, eccentric people, being bothered to try and preserve such ridiculousness. I have to say, the problem is when you buy a car like that, you can't really drive it because the entire point of it is the fact it's a time capsule. If you remove the time capsule-ness, it's just a super clean Ford Ka. And that's not quite the same anymore, is it? A bit like there was a Metro that went up for sale fairly recently. It had very low, not quite that low mileage, but like 2,000 miles for an early 80s city car. And you're like, well, that's amazing. But what do you do with it?
Yeah.
You just kind of stare at it. I don't know. Yeah.
It is an ornament, isn't it, really?
It is an ornament. It's a very cool ornament. But, well,
you
I told
trailer
you
it to shows to show it to other Metro perverts or car enthusiasts.
The Metro had a birthday, didn't it, last week, in between this podcast and the last one? I think it turned 40.
No, that was last year.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, October 1980, I think the Metro was
announced. Was it 80? I thought it was 81.
No.
Oh, gosh, I'm totally out there. That's not even...
You want to check your Metro anniversary calendar? I think you've got it on the wrong page. I think the next big one will be something like, you know, automatic transmission introduced or something like that. But the MG Metro, that'll be quite soon, 82.
Oh, yeah.
And then the turbo.
Gotta say, my daughter got a mobile phone for Christmas. First one.
Really?
First one. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's the beginning of the end. But park the discussion around that because I still don't really agree with it. She was choosing a ringtone and she said, oh, I think I want Back in Black by AC/DC. And my heart melted. I thought, that's pretty cool for an 11-year-old to decide.
Yeah, that is cool.
Voluntarily. And and of course, I hear it a lot now. And I know that old Brian Johnson is a good bloke and a car nut. And I keep thinking, why restrict yourself to just black? Could we not have had a couple of other options? Or maybe, could he, maybe if he's bored during lockdown, could people write into him and say, oh, could you say it, but like with my actual paint number and a name? So
like
it's
back
different.
In Vermilion Red or something.
Yeah, so I just thought, oh, let's just go straight into British Motor Company name, BMC. Okay. Back in GR29 Cumulus Grey. That'd be all right. And you go, and you say, Brian, if you do that, I'll send 20 quid to your charity.
I don't think he needs the money, but I suppose if he did it for charity and he was a bit bored.
Back in BG15, Sandy Beige, and I'm gonna it could work.
It could. I'm sure we know how to get in touch with him. We could
I know someone that knows him quite well. I'm sure you
I
know
do as well. I wonder if it's the same person. No, maybe not. Anyway, not to
well,
worry.
We'll see if we can. Should we do that whole? Let's see if we can pull some Smith and Sniff strings.
I wouldn't pull any of the Smith and Sniff strings. cause a load of isopon to come out and a load of chicken wire and newspaper, and you go, oh, shit. Wasn't as well made as
oh,
it was.
That's exactly it. That's the ingredient that's missing from the ultimate car enthusiast aftershave, a little bit of David's isopon. But just a little bit, because you know how potent it is. Yes. It's heady
like
shit.
The chilli powder of car repairs.
Have you ever opened a tin just a little bit with your nose close?
No.
Of isopon?
No.
Car body filler? Bloody no. Hell, man, you've got to be careful.
Oh, does it make you a bit giddy?
Oh, you've got to be so careful. Oh, it's seriously potent. No naked flames, for sure.
Mm.
Not that you would, because these days, if it was dark, you'd use a torch rather than a flaming flaming branch.
It depends where in the country you are, but yeah, I don't know. I was going to bring up something that you sent to me, talking as we sort of were about cars, but it's actually not related, it's just a new paragraph. You sent me that link to that abandoned Golf that all the people on the street where it's dumped.
Oh, it had a birthday party,
it gave
or
it
an anniversary.
A 1 year anniversary of being dumped on their street.
Being an abandoned car that the council can't be bothered to take away.
Which I thought was fantastic. In Shefford, which looks like a typo of Sheffield, but it's not, is it? Is that near you?
Shefford is just down the A1 between me and Bedford, I think.
Okay, I thought I'd
see. So it's not far from where we used to film a lot of the Smith and Sniff videos.
Okay, yeah.
Off of Baldock Services area.
Yeah, yeah. I'll come to Baldock in a minute.
Oh, will you?
Yeah, but I just want to say about this Golf I thought was fabulous. The story that you sent me from Auto Evolution says residents in Shefford, UK decide to throw an abandoned Volkswagen Golf the birthday party it probably never had back when it was in use. The five-door hatchback has been abandoned on George Street for a little over a year, and despite several complaints filed with the council and the mayor, no one seems eager to move it. So as a form of protest, neighbours got together and threw the Golf a birthday party on its one-year anniversary. Included homemade decorations, supermarket-bought party decorations, drawings, and what looks like a list of complaints filed with the council for the car's removal. And there's some pictures. And they've just covered it in things, birthday
I love it.
Things.
When I saw that article that somebody, I can't remember, somebody forwarded it to me. What I loved was the fact that the council's official response was, wow, it just looks too good to have been abandoned. And that's it. Looks too new and it's too good. Well, yeah, but also somebody could have dropped dead in their home and they could have been dead for a year now and nobody knows. And that's their car.
It does. It says here, so I hadn't actually scrolled down to the bottom of the thing where it says the council refused to remove the car because they thought it looked too good to actually be abandoned. This despite the fact that it's slowly filling with litter like discarded junk food containers, shampoo bottles and all. It's slowly filling, so it's like it's unlocked.
Hang on, shampoo bottles? Who just has a bag full of shampoo bottles? I mean, I haven't got that much hair, so I don't use shampoo. But a lot of people in my family do. But we don't exactly, like, get through the bottles of shampoo.
No. Weird, isn't it? The one thing that they've been littering shampoo bottles again.
Well, tramps can use them. I mean, they're a warmer place to sleep. Put the seat on full recline.
A long time ago, when I used to live in the Tufnell Park area of London, there was a Renault 5 Campus that just sort of lived down the road from me. And one day I walked past it and one of the back side windows had been put in. It had been broken into.
Yeah.
So I saw that. And then the next day I walked past and the owner had put a bin bag over it in the accepted style.
Of course.
The morning after that, I used to walk past every day on my way to work. And the morning after I walked past, the bin bag was still there, but it had obviously been torn a bit. And there was a homeless man sleeping on the back seat.
Just torn a bit? Well, did he need a bit of ventilation?
Well, no, I presume that's how he'd got into the car, was by tearing the bin bag.
There's people that do live in cars. I think we've had this conversation before. There was a woman in the 1970s in London that lived in a Ford... it was a Ford Consul or a Ford...
Yeah, I think...
Do you remember she was in the papers a lot because she was apparently a really quite nice, pleasant lady. Lived on a half decent. She picked a half decent street.
Yeah, wasn't it?
And the car hadn't been moved in something like 10 years.
It was in somewhere sort of quite suburban and pleasant, like Surbiton or something. It was. Wasn't there a celebrity angle as well? I think you might have sent me this story.
I probably have. I'm getting to that age where I can't remember what I say or do. It's quite bad, isn't it?
Who is this? My dog's going nuts downstairs. Idiot.
You got intruders?
Probably. No, she'd lick them. She just is the postman who she fucking well knows is not going to steal our stuff, but she just shouts at him anyway. She's a buffoon. That golf story reminded me of, have I told you about this, the sour lady and the Honda Jazz in my neighbourhood?
Did you say sour?
There's this sour old woman who lives near me, and she's just sort of famously a bit sour. And she has, by quirk, no one around here has driveways generally, but by a quirk of where her house is on a corner, she has a little driveway. And she has an old-shaped Polo, like a 90s one. And it's perfectly small enough to fit on her drive. But she never parks her Polo on her drive, and she never parks in front of her drive. She parks in front of her house, and if anyone parks in front of her drive, she leaves a note on their car.
Of course she does.
And this is just sort of well known in our neighbourhood. Oh, don't park in front of that drive, because even though she doesn't seem to ever use it, she gets very narky if anyone blocks it. And then one day someone abandoned a Honda Jazz halfway across her drive, and it was there for almost a year.
Really?
Yeah.
Did she not move it herself?
Well, no, because she couldn't, because it was not hers. And I looked it up, and it was taxed and insured, so it was a legit car, which is why you couldn't get the council to hoik it away. And they didn't take it away until the MOT ran out. But in the meantime, you know, there's that thing where the car interiors go very mouldy sometimes.
Yeah, it's usually foodstuffs, remnants of foodstuffs on the steering wheel. Or on the edge of the seats.
Yeah, it's always the steering wheel, isn't it? And then I had a car that went a bit mouldy once, and it was steering wheel, gear stick, and the seat belt clasp. And I guess it's just stuff you touch with, like, greasy fingers or something.
Oh, it is. It's your crisp fingers, Rich.
Yeah. And the Jazz went full furry inside, but could not be moved. But then I started... It became a bit of a thing in the neighbourhood. It was like, you know... That Jazz is still there. She must be furious.
Of course.
So, yeah, the Jazz stayed there for almost a year. And
I started to worry.
I know, but I started to worry that she might think it was me, just because I think she's aware that I work with cars, because she's left notes on press cars that I've accidentally left sort of slightly across her drive. And, overhang just over the drop curb, and she leaves a note. So I started to worry that she might think it was kind of some kind of prank from someone in the neighbourhood, which, as far as I'm aware, it wasn't. But then I did start to wonder a little bit, and I mentioned it to a friend of mine in the car trade, just told him this story, and he went, well, I'll tell you what, if the Jazz gets taken away and you want to really piss her off, I'll trailer down some shitty old Part X of mine, and we can leave that there for a while if you want.
Should we just keep buying old shitters on Gumtree and having them delivered to that address?
Yeah, exactly.
Just saying, just stick it on the drive, mate. It's absolutely fine. Don't knock on the door. I'm busy. I work nights. So,
well, actually, no. Could you drop it off at 4 a.m. please, and do please be quiet. That would be great. Thanks ever so much. Cheers. Yeah, it did cross my mind, but I didn't do it because it felt spiteful. But even though it would have been quite funny. Anyway.
The lady that we were just talking about, who lived in a car for many years, her name was Anne Naismith. She was known as the Car Lady of Chiswick.
Oh, Chiswick. Okay.
And she was described as a cherished character of the area. She used to live in an old Ford. I can't remember the name of it. The old Ford that looked American. Is it a Zephyr or a Zodiac?
Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
And then latterly, when it got taken away by the council, she got a Mercedes 123 230 TE. And
no way.
Yeah, unfortunately, she got killed in 2015. She got hit by a lorry crossing one of the roads in the street where she lived. She used to carry lots of bags, and she was apparently decided to live in a car after a failed relationship, and what? She was a concert pianist.
Oh my God.
It just goes to show that people are strange, right? You know, there's some strange people about, but interesting, nevertheless.
Wow.
Yeah, that's, I love the fact there's a picture on the internet of her climbing out of her 230TE, which is cool because that's actually the best 1-2-3 choice, even if you're not going to move it ever. It's the 230 was always my favourite. I've had all of them. I've had the 80, the 30 and the 200. I've actually might have had the diesel as well, but we won't talk about that.
240,
yeah, is it? Oh, yeah, the 240 diesel was like people who are stubbornly tight to the point where they go, no, I'm buying this because it's bound to be the most thrifty, and you realise it hasn't actually got enough power to make the car go along.
Wasn't there a 200 diesel in that shape as well, which was probably like... I mean,
or is that like Greek market only or something?
Yeah. For some reason, you could only buy it on Malta and it had 47 horsepower.
It had three gears. It's a tax dodge kind of Mercedes. I don't know, but it's awful.
No, I've never... a back seat. You couldn't actually open the back doors, even though it looked like you could. Yeah, one of those.
Do you just love all those tax dodge? You know, like it's a bit like the van versions of the Discovery and latterly the Suzuki Jimny coming back, but only as a commercial vehicle. And I spoke to Suzuki and I went, can you not just buy one and then order a back seat through you? And they went, no, you can't do that. I went, are you sure though, guys? Are you sure?
Were they winking a lot as they said this?
Do you know what I said to them? I said, but are you sure though? Because, you know, that it's what I'm thinking. And they went, no, we can't, because it's been intentionally made. I need to see this to believe it. It's been intentionally made without any of the seat mountings in the back.
Oh.
So you can't actually mount a seat to anything.
So it's the GT Porsche GT3s.
You
just simply cannot put the back seat in.
But you can, though. If you gave me enough money today to buy a GT3, within 4 weeks I'd have a back seat with ISOFIX in it. Because it's got a floor pan... And it's got some areas of which you could fabricate mountings. I just don't buy that you can't.
Well,
still 911, isn't it?
When we finished our old shape Range Rover versus A6 all road air suspension collapse challenge, we'll take things up a notch by buying you a 911 GT3 with the Johnny Fitz and ISOFIX compatible backseat challenge, and then we crash test the car to see if it works.
We would be in grave danger of looking like one of those TV evangelists who claims that he's humble and thanks for all the donations before getting onto his private crisp white jet and flying to the next next prayer meeting, where he's going, oh yeah guys, thanks for your Patreon contributions, it helps us to keep the channel going, PS I've just bought a new GT3 Touring.
Yeah, is that why you're wearing a Rolex Daytona? Oh, the Lord blessed me with this. Yeah, thanks, mate. Yeah, speaking of tarting for money, sort of bit, I've got a new book, and I wanted to plug it because
I think I've seen it. You never even told me you were writing this.
Well, so this is the thing. There's obviously a sort of official story about this. The official story is it's a lost novel by the car journalist Roy Lanchester, who is of course a fictional character off my website, and in 1983 he wrote a sort of Cold War thriller about the attempted theft of a British fighter plane design and the attempts to track down who was infiltrating the British aircraft industry and stealing from it and then sorting it out with a trip behind the Iron Curtain. And that's the backstory that Roy wrote this book in 1983 and then couldn't get it published, so he just stuck it in a drawer, and then it's finally seen the light of day now. But the real story is, obviously, I just wrote it last year, and I... oh, no, spoiler alert. But there's this thing called National Novel Writing Month, or they use the hashtag NaNoWriMo.
Pardon?
I can never remember it. NaNoWriMo.
That's about as catchy as...
It looks better written down with some capitals in it, but...
okay. Trust me. I believe you.
It's mostly an American thing, and the idea is that it's a challenge to people who've, you know, want to write a novel or are writing a novel, that you through the month of November... you try and write 50,000 words. And I sort of belatedly thought, why don't I give that a try? And I'd had this idea for this sort of lost Roy Lanchester book that was only sort of half formed. But I thought, fuck it, I'll just take a run at it. So, yeah, I started on the 4th of November and I finished on the 7th of December. So it was written in quite a rush. But it's sort of meant to be deliberately shite, so that was okay. And the problem with Roy is, particularly Roy of 1983, is that he sort of overdoes the, you know, spy-style writing a little bit. So he's constantly describing the lead character as muscular in ways that are not necessarily quite appropriate. So there's a sex scene in which it's revealed that he has a muscular penis, and sometimes he thinks things inside his muscular head. So it's obviously it's meant to be dog shit, but for comic effect.
Cold War era sex scene. Okay.
The sex scene's really bad, but okay. You know, with the proviso that it's meant to be. And I was sort of worried it's not bad enough, but I got a bit coy and bailed out of writing any more details. So yeah, essentially, if you're interested in a spoof Cold War thriller that's deliberately nonsensical in places and was written in a month in 2020 rather than actually in 1983, then knock yourself out. It's called Steel Flies and it's supposedly by Roy Lanchester. I'm sure I'll be mentioning it endlessly on Twitter.
When you said the name, when I saw the name of the cover, I kept singing Steel Bars by Michael Bolton.
What? I can,
yeah, I'm sure it's a song you're familiar with, right?
It's not, no.
Oh, frig. Well, you need to listen to it because it's a Michael Bolton top hit, I would suggest. And really? I don't even know that much about Michael Bolton.
No, apart from the fact that
didn't he have cameo appearances in a really funny TV show about 4 years ago that someone put me onto? And I can't remember the name of it, but it was hilarious. He would just turn up and just sing really cheesy songs all the time. He was actually a funny lad.
Oh, okay. Yeah, is this when Prince turned up in New Girl and you kind of go, is that really
actual Prince?
Holy shit, yeah.
There was this I watched the Graham Norton interview show the other day and he interviewed Jimmy.
Oh, I saw that. Jimmy Fallon table tennis anecdote.
Sensational. I mean, like, I couldn't even believe that it was real because it just sounded totally made up, but it's fantastic.
It's funny because I watched that exact same show on my own the next day. I tried to retell the Prince table tennis Jimmy Fallon anecdote to my wife, and as I was telling it, I thought, this just sounds shit. This sounds like I'm just making up a very random story. It's like, this is implausibly strange. And yeah, I was like, when Jimmy Fallon told it, because he's very good at it. It's a fabulous tale.
Have you got any? You must have a tale like as cryptic as that from the Grand Tour / TG times. You must have. I mean, the one that you've said before about George Michael phoning the office to complain about his...
See
if he can get to the bottom of why his Range Rover kept misbehaving.
Yeah,
That was so good.
It was the, will you come on the show? Can I talk about my faulty Range Rover? Well, yeah, you can, but, you know, you just do the lap in the car and stuff like, no, I don't want to do that. I just want to talk about the faulty Range Rover.
It's
the
bit where... It's just going to turn into a watchdog. That's what I love about it. It's going to be George Michael staring down the barrel of the camera going, this is just not acceptable. Every time I turn the cruise control on, the left-hand window goes down and I'm at my wit's end. So I've come on national television to set this straight immediately. He should have got what kind of Finch would he have got if he'd gone Finch spec with the Range Rover?
I was going to say Song Finch, but there's no such thing, is there? I'm not very good on Finches. I don't know the types.
Oh, yeah, there's got to be a... Hang on, let's have a quick Google of Finches.
Are you Googling Finches?
I am Googling.
Your wife's shouting from downstairs, Johnny, are you Googling Finches again?
It just sounds... Hang on. Types...
Only George Michael could have actually... is the guy we need to save me from the half-baked idea I have to
buy an old Range Rover. Here we go, RSPB website. Types of finches, the bird family overview. Here we go, house finch, European goldfinch, Atlantic canary finch.
Do they really say overview?
It does say
this
overview.
Fantastic. Go, now, here's an overview of kestrels. It's from one point.
Bullfinch, chaffinch, brambling, which is apparently a kind of finch, common rosefinch, goldfinch,
grosbill. Rosefinch?
Yeah, Hawfinch. Ooh, but not spelt like that. H-A-W, Hawfinch. Greenfinch. Common red pole, a linnet, a parrot crossbill, classed as a finch apparently, Scottish crossbill, a serin, which is apparently a finch, a twite, which you got to say carefully, you absolute twite finch. that's just a really badly driven over finch, you absolute twite finch. Yeah, they're all the finches I've got on the RSPB site, so...
There we go. Well... Once again, Smith & Sniff proves itself to be...
Oh, you've got a purple finch.
Automotive podcast that also lists finches.
I don't know anything about finches. I think I've just realised that.
What a shameful gap in your general knowledge. You know nothing about finches.
Honestly. All I know is that when I see a goldfinch, if a goldfinch comes to the garden, I do stop and stare because it's worth it. That's all I know.
Yeah, they're pretty, aren't they? They're good.
They're very, very, very beautiful. And you just go, ah, that's pretty cool. Imagine waking up and flying around and looking like that. That'd be quite cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, anyway,
you're off to Gumtree to buy an inappropriate family car that you don't need.
I'll accidentally buy a Hummer H1 that I don't need. And you're going to go and swat up on finches, I suppose. But that's probably enough.
I am, actually. I think I am going to.
This week, I have four things to tell you. The first one is that we now have a Patreon for this show. So if you're feeling generous and you don't mind chucking in a few quid to ensure that we keep doing this toss, then please do. And many people already have, and we thank you enormously for it. We're actually quite overwhelmed by how many people have already joined up. And the second thing I have to tell you is Johnny has a solo YouTube channel. It's called The Late Break Show. So please go and check that out. The third thing is that I have several books out now, it seems, but one of them is called The Boring Book of Car Trivia. It's called Boring Car Trivia Volume 2, yes.
Yeah.
Or by Steel Flies by Roy Lanchester, which is a spoof Cold War novel. Is that what else I have to tell you? Oh, yeah, finally, to avoid being recognised in major cities, the trick that David Bowie used to employ was to go and buy a Greek newspaper. And then people would see him but assumed it couldn't be David Bowie because David Bowie isn't Greek.
I think that's just fantastic. It's probably a tax dodge as well.
Well, you can claim it back.
I bet his accountant said, listen, if you subscribe to a Greek newspaper, that'll shave 12% off your annual tax.
The thing is, that is a brilliant trick, but if I'd seen David Bowie walking down the street with a Greek newspaper, I'd just think, that's so Bowie. He's working on something.
Looking for inspiration. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's trying to become a character, or he's putting himself in the position of someone he's going to sing about, or a scenario.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm with you on that. Totally. He probably, that's why he used to drive some different cars, putting himself in a character.
Yeah, the character who had a Volvo 262.
262 Bertone, yeah. Oh, in fact, if anyone's interested in buying a Volvo 262 Bertone, not one that was owned by David Bowie, sadly, I am going to be selling one very soon, and my wife doesn't want me to keep it. So please, if you're seriously interested, can you let me know? It has to go.
Serious offers, please. All right, well, we'll see you again for more of Johnny selling his stuff and listing finches and me trying to hawk tat that I've written next week, same time. Until then, thank you ever so much for listening. Goodbye.
Goodbye. All right, Porter, it's Saturday morning. I'm feeling fresh, so if you can hear that, got a bit of brute left. Listen to this. Oh, absolutely throwing it on. My neck's like some sort of really pungent water feature, like 70s male water feature.